Welcome to the latest Watercolors Aquarium Gallery podcast, brought to you from the Aquarium Studios in downtown Grand Rapids, Michigan. My name is Ben.
I'm Amy.
And I'm Charles.
Today, we are going to talk about all of those fish that are 100% safe with your shrimp. But before we do that,
we have to do our shameless plug. Guys, get over to watercolorsaquariumgallery.com. Check out our live plants. Check out our merch, fun stickers and mugs and t-shirts, and aquarium supplies for your tank. We do have a coupon code right now for a free mystery plant with purchase. So if you use code surprise me, I will surprise you with whatever got around. Which, you know, like sometimes it might be some hornwort and guppy grass, but right now I've got like a crazy amount of this gorgeous hybrid Ludwigia that's what I'd be sending out. So use the code.
Fun. I love it. I was wondering if we could do codes. That's good.
Yes, we can.
I was going to ask you that. Now I know.
Yes, we can.
Look for hats coming soon.
Ooh.
We had a regular customer who is a podcast listener come in the store today wearing a competitor's hat from one of the big online reef supply companies, but I'm not going to say who it was.
We can do embroidered too. That would be cool.
Yeah. And he actually walked in and said, guys, you see I'm stuck wearing this hat, so you guys need to get some hats so I can get rid of this hat.
All right.
So
all right.
We'll have some hats coming soon.
That's a good idea. I kind of want one, so.
Yeah. It's in the works.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's talk about shrimp safe fish.
You had to think about that, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, so just all right, just a little side note here, guys. If you hear me say reef safe fish, for some reason I have that stuck in my head. We are not talking about reef fish. We're talking about freshwater shrimp.
Shrimp safe.
Let's talk about all of those fish that are 100% safe with your shrimp. Okay, go. you got nothing?
I don't know. I'm pretty confident about some of these, but I don't think I could make that statement ever.
See, no. I have one fish on my list that I'd be like, I would be surprised, not because that they tried. I'd be surprised that, like, wow, you were that determined to pull it off with that mouth morphology? All right.
All right.
Yeah. Still don't know if I'd be shocked, but I would be surprised.
Yeah.
So the point that we're making here is the likelihood of the fish that we're going to talk about today of eating your shrimp or affecting your shrimp population long term is much, much lower than it is with, say, a pistos, right?
Yeah, and honestly, when you're looking at those lists out there, it's hard to find one that doesn't have a betta or a cichlid on it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why a betta became the default shrimp companion when if you go onto, like, shrimp forums, it's like half people complaining about their bettas eating their shrimp or eating their shrimp food or getting too fat or like literally just an endless list of problems.
Yeah. So want to hear a funny story?
Sure.
Okay. And this is directly related to shrimp safe fish. I said it right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For a long time at one of my old stores, we had a it was not a 29. It was a 50 gallon breeder. So that'd be a 36 by 18 by 20 inch tall tank. That was this really beautifully scaped, densely planted aquarium with lots of moss in it. And we had a group of cherry shrimp in there and we had emperor tetras in there. And this was at least 10, 12 years ago. So shrimp were like just becoming this thing. And pretty much it was just cherry shrimp. That's all that we had. And that tank could supply enough cherry shrimp for us to sell out of constantly, even with those emperor tetras in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Plenty of them. We would get baby tetras. We would get baby shrimp. It just happened naturally. So we had this couple come in. This mom come in with two kids saying, hey, we want to buy 6 shrimp. All right, cool, no problem. And so I went over to the tank, netted out 6 shrimp, and I put them in the bag. And they spent some time wandering around the store. And then the kids were like, but we want to do this instead. I don't remember what they decided to do. And the mom looked at me with this, can we change our mind on the shrimp and get something different instead? And with them all standing right next to me, I said, sure, absolutely, no problem. And I poured the 6 shrimp into those tank and doop, 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 doop. Wait, was that 6? Doop, 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 doop. Right? All 6 cherry shrimp were immediately devoured by the emperor tetras, with which they had been living peacefully for a couple of years.
As the kids look on in horror. Just remember, kids, this is your fault because you didn't love them enough.
Yeah.
That's a great example of what we're talking about.
Exactly. Fish are going to be opportunistic. And I'm pretty confident that everything on my list, somebody out there has had eat a shrimp. So what we're doing is we're talking about fish that the likelihood of your shrimp population being dramatically affected is going to be very low. If you've got lots of great cover, shrimp can actually coexist quite well with even things that are going to readily prey upon them.
Yeah, like you can tetras. Do a cichlid in a tank with shrimp. It's going to hunt down as many as it can, but how many can it? That's right. The question.
Yep, exactly.
I really want to touch on that, like, fish are opportunistic things comment you made, because, like, I don't think people really appreciate that about, like, a fish as a group of organisms, because, like, as a group, that, like, to me, mentally, that's one of their defining features, is the fact they're so opportunistic. Like, you don't get 35,000 of anything just by sitting on your laurels, you know what I mean? Like, like, fish just are immediately fill in any niche that they can, and then mammals are like, oh, we'll stop at like 3,000 species, it's fine, we're good,
we got it covered.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, wow.
More than 10 times the species.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. That's good. I like it. All right. So, few caveats. We are talking generally about Cardinia and Neocardinia. Neocardinia is typically going to be Neocardinia heteropoda. No, sorry. Neocardinia davidi. Originally, it was Neocardinia heteropoma or heteropoda, but they have now all been put into davidi. Those originate. Do you guys know where those originated?
There's a couple of different collection locations, but I think they're Southeast Asia, right?
They are Eastern China and Northern Taiwan is where Neocardinia davidi is from. Now, they have been spread by humans through lots of different places, but that's where they originate. Do you know where Cardinia are from?
Like everywhere else that they're shrimp.
No. and Cardinia continensis, which would be the crystal shrimp, the bee shrimp, right? Uh-huh. The ones of that, not amanos, those are found in lots of different places and things like that, right? But Cardinia continensis, which the crystal reds and the those, you know where those guys mm-hmm. are from? They are a Taiwan endemic.
Oh, interesting.
I did not know that until I started researching this this podcast. So I thought that was cool. We just think of them as being kind of everywhere, but they're from very specific areas.
Although they do sort of use Cardinia as a catch-all. Like, that's what all the Sulawesi shrimp are under and everything, too.
I'm talking specifically about that species. The bee cool. shrimp, which are like the crystal reds and all those.
Well, I mean, they do call one of the varieties the Taiwan bee, so...
Right.
Yeah.
I think Taiwan B is the natural form.
Cool.
Yep.
I've always heard, and like, with it's so tough to track back like shrimp lines and stuff like that information that's actually like legitimate. But I've always heard lore that like there are basically three lines of Neocardina davidi that like occur from slightly different locations that are like the sources of our ornamentals, mm-hmm. but you can't verify that information.
Right.
You just see weird charts with no sources everywhere.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. All right, Amy, what's your first one?
Anyway, I didn't prepare to talk about shrimp today. I prepared to talk about fish.
Oh, well.
I'm going to start with, I think, probably the most essential shrimp tank companion, which is the Otocinclus.
Oh, yeah.
Which,
sure.
That's going to be one of mine. Like, I am not sure if they can eat a baby shrimp.
Yeah, that's the one that was on my list that I was like, I don't know if they can, but if one pulled it off, I wouldn't be like, you were that determined, buddy. All right.
So there are, let's see, did I write it down? 19 roughly species of Otocinclus out there. Are all found in South America in the Amazon, I believe. But you will likely either have Vitatis or Macrospilus if you're seeing like just common autos at a store. But there are some really, really cool ones too that would go just as well. Like, there are some really pretty ones. Kokama is the like fancy one that I think you'll see the most often, which is the tiger otter. But that's actually an endangered species, I found out. It's only found in one location.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And the like the IUCN listing talks a little bit about like the only real thing they can attribute it to is collection of mature adults. So we don't really know exactly why that's happening. But if you go with that species, probably at least try to breed them. They're considered endangered.
Is the zebra otter and the tiger otter the same species, or are those two different species? Do you know?
As far as I know, there's only one that has that sort of zebra-ish pattern.
Okay.
So okay. The common name I had for it was tiger, but the species name is Kokama. They show up on our lists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I put them down as zebra otter.
Yeah, it kind of shows up somewhat often, so I was really surprised to read that.
Yeah, yeah. They are listed through our wholesaler as zebra otters. The galaxy otter and the black otter are the other two that we see on our lists sometimes.
Yeah, the galaxy is awesome.
Those are very, very cool. That is a pricey fish. Like, I think the galaxy otter would probably $29.99, $34.99, yeah, right around that range. But if you're doing a shrimp tank, you're probably doing a small shrimp tank. Buy a superstar for it. And a galaxy otter would be a pretty cool superstar.
Yeah, exactly. Like a really cool looking, really fancy, you're the only one who has it fish. Mm-hmm. $25-$30 or so. It's not that bad.
It's not like you're going to be getting 10 of them.
But I think that's part of it, is that people have this impression that you have to. Like, I've seen people say you have to get at least a dozen autos.
I think with the common autos, you need a group. But I think 5 to 7, I should say it this way. If you buy 5 to 7 from a place that conditions them, like we do here at Watercolors, mm-hmm, where we get in 50, condition them, make them good and hardy, make them ready to go, and then buy a group of 5 or 7, I think that's fine. But those fish live in groups.
Right.
The fancy ones don't, which is kind of why the fancy ones are really expensive and the common autos are not really expensive, because they are easy to catch in a big group.
Yeah, and the common ones are definitely gregarious, but I've seen plenty of people do 1 or 2, and you can't tell that they're suffering or anything to that effect. Right. But if you're getting like fresh imports or fish that you don't know how they were handled, like group size is definitely very, very important for that.
We kind of learned that one the hard way. You know, we were getting in six or a dozen of them when we were small and just kind of getting going, and we would lose a bunch of them. When we started getting them 25 or 50 at a time, we wouldn't lose any.
That's an interesting thing about ordering fish, where it's like you kind of have to take the leap to order more, mm-hmm, when you're having like some poor success. It's like if you have a small group of autos, you have less success. Okay, well, let's order 5 times as many.
And it worked.
Yep.
Yep. That's a great choice. I had that on my list too. I had zebra specifically on my list, but that's worth covering just as a clump.
Yeah, the whole group, perfect for shrimp tanks, I think.
Yep. Charles?
So I put butterfly barbs on my list.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because they're these little...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
They're
tiny.
Yeah.
I was thinking of a different barb for some reason.
So
you just hear barb and shrimp and you're like, no. Don't do it.
But these guys are just so small. I'm not, like, I'm sure they can pick off some of the little ones, but they just... I think this is a case of size matters, and these guys are just small, so their ability to do damage just isn't very high. What I was looking up while you were looking stuff up is that this is a species we've talked about, how there are different color morphs, and people are actually starting to split up what we now know as butterfly barbs into multiple species. I'm seeing Enteriomyus holsteri, which is the quote unquote the standard that we're used to, mm-hmm, and then the newer one I've started seeing the name thrown around is Candens.
Interesting.
So there's at least two species of butterfly barbs out there now.
Well, those that's are one. Some, oh, go ahead.
Those are some gorgeous little barbs.
Yeah.
That's one that I've heard before. It's one of those fish where it's like you collect them here and they have one pattern. You collect them here and they have one pattern. So yes, it doesn't surprise, mm-hmm, me too much to hear that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I thought it'd be a fun update, but also just I genuinely think they would look good in a shrimp tank.
It is the case that the Cardinas, to get them to reproduce, you really got to mess around with the water a little bit, and butterfly barbs would just thrive in a lower pH, softer water environment, which is, mm-hmm, what you want for your crystal shrimp, your bee shrimp, to reproduce.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a great choice.
Absolutely.
They're gorgeous little fish.
And also, like, I'm picturing, like I get that these barbs are kind of pricey. Depending on where you're getting them, they're, like, $15, $20 a pop. But, like, if you're setting up a small, let's say, like, we're going with the philosophy of if you can't go big, go crazy. Make your fish and shrimp count, man. Yep. Like, if you're working in a 3 to 8 gallon tank, I think a group of these would fit in just fine.
That would be really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and yep. You could put a half dozen of them in a tank that size. They're tiny.
They're small, yeah.
Well, I'm going to start out with a fish I don't get to talk about very often.
Mm.
Well, at least not as often as I would like to. Mm. Okay, I talk about them all the time.
I was waiting for it.
I figured I just might as well come out with this, right? I think clown killies would be a fantastic addition to a shrimp tank. Not just because of their size, but also because they're surface hunters. They mm-hmm. don't look down for food. They're not really even good at looking down for food. I think you may be able to get away with a number of other fish in that genus, the Epiplatys genus, but the clown killie would be, for me, just a no-brainer, just because of size and the likelihood of a clown killie, even if it did see an adult cherry shrimp. I don't think it would. It might even be scared of an adult cherry shrimp.
And let's be honest, they're the prettiest Epiplatys anyway.
I agree. Yeah, yep, I agree.
Yeah, great choice.
Again, another one for a candidate for the small 3 to 7 gallon aquarium.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep it covered. Mm-hmm. They can definitely handle messing with the water a little bit too, so they could be good for the Cardina species. And they're easy.
Yeah, having something towards the top is a good balance mm-hmm. for a shrimp tank too, where so much activity is on the bottom.
Right. Yep, agreed.
Perfect. Okay. Go with a different one. I think you'd probably need to go with a little bit of a bigger tank here, but still perfectly shrimp safe, or as far as we can say. Threadfin rainbows, Iria Thurina werneri.
Oh, for sure. With those teeny little mouths.
Yeah, exactly. They're a fish that gets a couple of inches long, and you know, another rainbow fish of that size, I would probably cringe at a little bit, but sometimes they struggle to eat flake foods, so I don't know if they can eat a shrimp. And again, they're not really focusing like on picking through rocks and stuff like that. They're really mostly focusing on showing off and sparring with each other and doing their little rainbow fish games.
Their natural food in the wild is going to be kind of the freshwater equivalent of zooplankton. So critters that are swimming around in the water column, not critters that are climbing around in the substrate.
Yeah, teeny tiny worms and bugs and whatever is hanging out up there.
Those might be my favorite small rainbow.
Yeah, it's hard to choose it because it's so different, but that's also right. Why like I'm so drawn to them because mm-hmm. it's the only species in its genus. These are actually really widespread. I was not expecting that, like from Indonesia to Australia.
Really?
Yeah, like the pH range recommended is 5 to 8.
Wow.
So I wonder if this might be going the way of the butterfly barb, where like it's just so much space that it's hard to imagine that they haven't changed a little bit along the way.
Yeah, that's a little too widespread to
you're like,
to be the
I
same.
Don't believe it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and like when was the last time those populations would have been together? Like really long time ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think for this, just to keep the males not fully distracted, it's probably good to have a, you know, they'll spar all the time if you have a high male population. So a few more females to males, but they don't hurt each other. So really just a good group is what to aim for.
They just go around going, I'm prettier. No, I'm prettier. No, I'm prettier.
It's a lot like a shift here.
No one competes with you, Charles.
Doesn't mean he doesn't compete with others.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. That means that would be a candidate for either Cardinia or Neocardinia.
Right. And like, I don't know, maybe it depends on collection location.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't know. We've never tried them in soft water, yeah. But they've always done fine for us in hard.
They do great here.
Yeah.
They're so cool.
I know. It's a fish you really need to see. Plus, we have a great design that Ben did of a threadfin rainbow.
We do.
So get some threadfin rainbows and then get a sticker.
Yeah, get some bling.
So I got one that I put on because I thought I was thinking along the lines of like the AutoCat, where I was like, it's another algae eater. Like, oh, so shrimp are algae eaters. That's the context you need here. I was thinking, what's great to keep with algae eaters? That they're algae eaters. What's something with a different morphology that'll eat like in a different part of the tank? And this is one I haven't tried. I would be very keen to, and I'd be willing to bet that it works. I'm just like kind of a oddball idea. At least to me, I thought Styphodon gobies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great choice.
Mm-hmm. Because they've got little mouths. They're great at getting at smooth surfaces, and the shrimp seem better at textured surfaces. You know?
Yeah. They're also just really, really pretty sometimes. Yeah. So it'd be a great little jewel to have in your tank.
They're really fun to watch.
And they just have, like, I don't know. They're just fun behavior. And I think that, a lot of people really underappreciate or utilize the Styphodon gobies, where, at least for me, the most fun I was having with them is if you have a collection of rocks where you want them to hang out and you can watch them, because their territory will set up there because they naturally want to eat algae growing on rocks. And then you have rocks that are growing algae on like a windowsill in like a little shoebox or something, and then you can trade them out. The gobies, they get real excited to see you when you're holding a rock. It's fun.
That's a fun behavior to watch.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, and it's one of those areas where you can replicate a wild behavior, which is just always such a great opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't get that very often in tanks.
It's a tough, I think, sell where like either people don't know about them, they're kind of like a bit of a niche, but they're not a breeding project. So like they don't really fall into... And I think they really slip through the cracks. People miss these fish. They don't have to be crazy pricey, but they can be gorgeous.
Yeah, it's definitely not a breeding project. That's one of those, I don't know that anyone will ever successfully manage to breed Styphodon gobies in captivity.
I'm sure someone will. I just don't think it'll ever happen commercially because some guy, there's 8 billion people in the world. Some guy's going to get bored enough to figure it out and do it once.
But they slip through the cracks that way, too, because you breed them like a marine fish. Yeah. So, like, freshwater breeders aren't really looking at them. Marine breeders couldn't care less. So, like, who's working with Styphodon gobies?
Yeah.
Somebody. One of our listeners.
Yeah, somebody try it. But you've got to imitate the getting washed out to sea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. At least I think, like, it's... fairly well described how to do it. I remember looking into it and seeing that like there were resources for it, but you know, not of people who are doing it, people who've just like observed and documented what's happening.
Okay, so the life cycle of this of these gobies are the gobies swim upstream as they develop from larval to adult stage.
Swim, crawl, climb.
Crawl up waterfalls, crazy, crazy things like that. I guess waterfalls are kind of like the their thing.
Yeah.
Right? They grow up into and mature in these pools above waterfalls. And then they spawn and the eggs are washed down the waterfall and washed out to sea. So if you imitated a bit of the waterfall ecosystem, and maybe you wouldn't even have to do that. Maybe if you just had a tank that had some flow, the fish would spawn in the tank. If you then pulled the adults and raised the salinity in the tank, I wonder if that would do it.
It might, but then they still have a true larval stage.
Planktonic stage.
Yeah.
Right.
So like
right.
That, like, okay, you get that far and then you have to deal with the planktonic stage.
Well, they are not threatened populations as far as we have been able to figure out. So just get some and put them with your shrimp and have a lot of fun with them because they're great.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yep.
I don't think it's something that are being harvested in mass too much either.
It's true.
There's got to be a term for it because I was just thinking, I just had the thought. So anadromous is when they like live out at sea and they spawn in fresh water. And catadromous is when they like live in fresh water and they spawn out at sea. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what's your... Like, I guess that would just make them anadromous. They're spawning fresh roamers.
Yeah.
But I almost feel like that life cycle's not quite the same. I don't know. I think because they're not migrating up the streams. They live in them, and then the offspring are... You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Seriously, fish use as amphidromous.
Amphidromus. Like A-M?
Yeah.
P-H-I.
Yeah, amphi.
Okay, that makes sense.
In which adults live and spawn in freshwater streams, but the initially pelagic post-hatched larvae are washed downstream.
See, I knew it had to be a weird term.
So it's not the eggs that are washed downstream, it's they hatch and then get washed downstream.
Looks like it, yeah.
Okay.
Crazy. Nature's crazy, man.
Yeah.
And then they're raised up in the ocean and then they come back. And like they're not salmon, they're an inch long.
Right. And they climb waterfalls.
But females can produce as many as 10,000 eggs in a single spawning event.
Holy cow. That gives you
less than half a millimeter in diameter.
Sheesh. Yeah, I guess there's probably a lot of planktivores waiting at the bottom of waterfalls for stepping on goby eggs.
But it looks like they spawn on the underside of rocks, so it would probably be something you could replicate.
That's true.
People have seen them spawn. Nobody has raised the babies.
I didn't expect that to be such a lively discussion about weird fish.
Those fish are always fun to talk about.
I know, right? They're cool. All right, Charles.
That was Charles.
I
stole one of mine.
That's right. Amy's such a goby person. I just kind of got stuck on that. All right. So my next fish is a fish that I think would go great with the clown killies. We have a really cool little group of them downstairs right now. The jelly bean tetras.
Yeah.
It's another tetra with a small mouth. It doesn't. Mm-hmm. And it's a small tetra with a small mouth. It's a really cool, unique looking tetra that I think wouldn't detract from your gorgeous crystal red shrimp.
Right. Be a good accent.
Mm-hmm. Easy to feed. They would get along great with the clown killies. Both of those would do great on frozen Daphnia and flake food as a combination. All three of those species, the crystal red shrimp, so the Cardina cantonensis, the jelly bean tetras, and the clown killies, would love it if you mess with the water a little bit, get that pH down a little bit, get that hardness down a little bit, mm-hmm. or even a lot, and they would be okay. They don't need black water, which is kind of cool. They can just have a low pH, softer, clear water environment and still be gorgeous and show all their good colors and stuff.
Yeah, even when they're not like fully colored up in soft water, they're still pretty, they're still mm-hmm. nice fish, but that really lets them shine.
It does. Yep.
Yep. Good choice. I never think about those.
Those two, the clown killie and the jelly bean tetra, that if you didn't have the shrimp in it, that could be considered biotopic.
Right?
They live in the same streams in Cameroon? I think Cameroon. Somewhere in West Africa. I can't remember which streams, but I think it's Cameroon. Or Sierra Leone.
Yeah, I was thinking Sierra Leone.
Yep, Sierra Leone.
Great choice.
Ever told you that my geography professor in college was from Sierra Leone?
Really?
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
If you ever, I can never think of it in the moment, but every once in a while I'll pronounce a country name just kind of off. It's because I learned geography from that guy.
Sure, that's why.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'm going to do something a little bit different, I think. So we talked a little bit about not putting cichlids or bettas in this tank. This, I think, is a good replacement for both.
Mm-mm.
Dario.
I was hoping somebody would bring those guys
up. The scarlet battis. These are battids are actually most closely related to like leaf fish, but they are somewhat in the area of bettas. This is the smallest battid species, but also the most colorful. So it's perfect for a little shrimp tank. Great for kind of eating food left behind and that kind of thing too. They're originally from India in the drainage into the Brahmaputra River. Get around an inch long. They'll definitely be able to pick off babies.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that I would put them in every shrimp tank, but in most shrimp tanks, they're going to be perfectly fine. We've used them in ours here, and they're definitely not the most highly decorated shrimp tanks because we want people to see them.
Yeah, I think if you're looking for production of your shrimp tank, don't put a battis in there.
Yeah.
But if your goal is to have this really cool ecosystem and have some of the shrimp multiply because you want some more of them, but doesn't matter how many. I think that would be a perfect addition to the tank.
Yeah, and there are a lot of fish that kind of fall into this category of, well, I mean, a little bit of supplemental food is not the worst thing for them.
Right.
And that is for sure. Having that little bit of extra wiggle room in how much you need to feed them, that can only make them healthier. They typically don't take dried foods. They're going to want to take like frozen bloodworms or Daphnia or that kind of thing. So some baby shrimp adds a little more variety.
A lot of the literature on those fish talks about them as being difficult to feed.
Yeah.
I don't feel like we've had that issue here. And I think frozen Daphnia and then using the Muina cultures to get them acclimated to it and then frozen Daphnia to just kick them along.
Yeah, I wonder if a little bit of it is our spoiling too from our wholesaler where like somebody's already been working with them and then we're taking time to work with them. But if they were stressed, I don't know, maybe they wouldn't eat at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true. But they're kind of like miniature dwarf cichlids.
Yeah, exactly.
The teacup cichlid.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to think of. I'm trying to think of the term there.
It's not toy. What's the one smaller than toy? Yep, teacup.
Teacup. I think a couple of the other batids might be small enough too, but some of them do kind of get up there into a couple of inches, and then I wouldn't bother.
Then they'd be hunting like an Epistoe would.
Yeah. Scarlet batids are supposed to be pretty easy to breed, we have heard. But yeah. You can't really find females, so if you do manage to see one, jump on it and, mm-hmm. and breed some.
Yep, that would be fun.
So this is a fish I wanted to include on this list because this fish definitely benefits from being in a shrimp tank.
Hmm.
Licorice grommies.
Yeah, in the same way I was just saying, basically.
Yep.
Like back in the day when we didn't have enough people to like give as much attention in the basement as we used to. We just
to
chuck them
and feed and stare and
we'd
wait.
Just chuck them in a shrimp tank, and when they weren't getting enough food from us, they'd pick off a few babies here and there, and the colonies would always find because it's a licorice grommie. Their ability to do damage on a shrimp colony is not.
Right.
That great. But it was enough for them for that they could go for months of neglect. And I don't know about longer because we would usually sell them by that point.
Right.
So, But yeah.
At least long enough for us to get them to take bloodworms.
Yeah.
And that's really what we needed there.
Yeah, that's another one of those fish that getting them through that conditioning period can get them onto standard aquarium fare, and having them in your shrimp tank is a good way to do it.
Yeah.
I think that's a kind of an important point to drive home, though, that with any of these fish where, you know, we're talking about them as, yeah, they might pick off a baby here and there. The suggested way to do it would be to get your shrimp tank going, get your shrimp population established and multiplying, and then add the fish.
Yeah.
That's going to just dramatically increase your chances. And then what I talked about with the Emperor Tetra example, if the fish are added later, they don't necessarily know to look down. If you add shrimp and the fish see those shrimp going in.
Guess what falls from the top of the tank?
Yeah, that's food.
Oh, you gave me a treat.
Yeah, great choice. Any tank you can get licorice gouramis in is a great choice.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. We did an entire podcast on them, right?
We did.
Yeah. Okay, I couldn't recall if it was just the talk or we did like the actual podcast. Yeah, go watch that podcast.
Yeah, seriously. If you skipped it because you weren't sure what licorice grommies were or if they were something you'd be interested in, go back. It's really a fish worth looking at.
If you want a fish that no one keeps, licorice grommies are the way to go, man.
Yep.
There's very few people keeping those.
And small.
They're so small.
Fish. 2.5 gallon tank is fine for a pair.
Your fish room could hold every species that exists if you really tried.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a great choice. Speaking of fish that feed from the surface, then I think would be a great choice for a shrimp tank, simply because I don't even know if they'd be capable of eating something off the bottom. Half beaks.
Ooh.
Some of them are going to max out at 2 inches long.
Yeah.
And a 2-inch long half beak is going to be like, I don't know, 3/8 of an inch, 1/4 inch in diameter. Not even that big. Teeny little fish. Skinny little fish. They are perfectly adapted to snagging insects from the surface. I mean, that is what they do. They can quickly adapt to taking them from the middle of the water column, but they're not going to look at the bottom. I think if you drop some shrimp in from the top, they might just eat those. But they're not going to look down for the shrimp. So I think a group of half-beaks in a tank like that could be really, really cool.
Yeah, that would be really unique. And like, half-beaks aren't super colorful, so they're not going to distract. But once people see them, then they will.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Because they're just so freaking weird.
Mm-hmm. They kind of look like a gar that's had half of their top beak chopped off.
Yes.
You know, chopped in half, if you will.
Or like a squid without tentacles.
Yeah, that's true.
Sure.
Yep. They got squid faces, Charles. Yeah. You know they do.
There's two or three species that are pretty regularly available. They are a live-bearing fish from Southeast Asia. And I think any of the species that you can find readily would be cool. They're a little on the touchier side, so you want to make sure you're doing it right when you have a fish like that. And I know a lot of the serious half-beak people will black out the sides of the tank and just leave the front viewing panel as the only place that the fish can actually see through, because there are stories of them damaging their lower beak because they slam into it too hard because they can't see that there's a wall there. So be a little bit conscious of that.
But I bet they can move real quick when they get going too.
Oh yeah. Those long skinny fish tend to do that.
Yeah. Zoom.
Zoom.
Good choice. I didn't even think about that. That would be fun. My turn, right?
Yes.
All right. Well, I'm kind of surprised I'm the one to bring these up, because to me, this is just as iconic as the Otto when it comes to shrimp tanks. Bararis species, literally any of them.
Yep. Had those on my list.
I literally put on my list anything other than chili rasboras.
There are six species, and yes, the one that most people know is the chili rasbora. But they're all awesome, and they all deserve places in people's tanks. The exclamation point to me is the coolest. It's the orange one. I love the little glow on it. But any of them, they're all beautiful. They're all perfect for a shrimp tank, and they're all teeny tiny, less than an inch fish.
Yeah, everyone thinks chili rasboras are the pretty ones, and they're not. They just color up the best in a store. All the other ones are just as pretty. They just don't color up in a store. But here's the thing. They're all, everything other than the chili is cheaper. You can get a fish that's just as cool for less.
It's true.
True. And these guys are this is the quintessential nano fish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like if you're doing a nano tank and I want a group of fish in a tiny tank. Bararis.
And it's amazing how quickly they seemed to become a staple too. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, when I started at the store like 7 or 8 years ago, I was like, oh yeah, that's a thing. And then like 3 or 4 years ago, everybody started wanting them.
Yeah, they sell almost as well as neon tetras now.
They're everywhere. It's just so easy to recognize how cool of a fish it is and how adaptable it is to different situations. They don't hide. They don't get stressed out easily. They just hang right where you want them in the tank and look awesome and chill.
The only challenge we have with them is keeping them in stock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and okay, yeah, you don't notice every half inch long fish you lose, but I can't remember ever losing a Bararis species.
Yeah.
No, they're
tough.
They're solid. Yep.
And these are black water fish that we're keeping in 7.8 pH. Most of them come from like 5.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
they would be contemporaries for many licorice grummy species.
Oh, mm-hmm. For sure. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you want that perfect picture in your shrimp tank, Bararis.
They're so small. Like, it's the best grouping little teeny fish that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, and, you know, 6 of them in a 2.5 doesn't seem that tight.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're just fine doing that. And I wouldn't say that about any other fish, I don't think, that you could do 6 of them.
No. They're not super zoomy either.
No, they're not.
Right.
Yep. Plus, it is one of the best genera names, too. Bararis is an anagram for rasbora. That's cute.
Yeah. Yep, it is cute.
You also sound like an ent when you say it.
Yeah.
Bararis. Antares.
An Ent? What's that?
From Lord of the Rings, the tree people.
Oh, that's right. Yep.
It's my geek moment there.
Good geek reference, Amy.
I had a moment where, like, I miss a particular coworker because she got all my geek references, and I started dropping, like, references the other day, and no one got them. I was like, gosh darn it.
Damn it.
I miss Tashi. anyways. Emerald Dwarf Danios.
Oh, yeah.
Silix Ixthes. Erythromicron. I picked this one specifically because I'm contrarian and I didn't want to put CPDs.
Yeah, I was going to say parentheses CPDs, but I don't want to say that.
But B, I honestly think these would be a better pairing with cherry shrimp, which are the most ubiquitous of the shrimp that people are keeping because, okay, well, you have a warm colored shrimp, get a cool colored fish.
Good contrast.
Yeah, I think they would go better. Also, I think those stripes would stand out more in a shrimp tank than spots.
This is a fish I think that deserves all the popularity of the CPD, if not more. The spots on a CPD are hard to compete with.
They're hard to beat.
That is a gorgeous little fish. The erythromicron with its stripes, it's close to that pretty, but its personality is so much better.
CPDs really just win the internet. Like, the pictures, that's the thing that I think sells so many people on them.
Right.
But when you see them in person, they're both equally beautiful.
I agree. Well, and if you can find the CPDs, because they're probably hiding.
Yeah.
But the emeralds usually aren't.
And these are a Lake Inlay endemic, I believe.
Adjacent. I don't know exactly where, but adjacent.
Okay. Found in that region, though.
Yeah.
In Myanmar.
Yeah.
I know they have been bred. I don't believe they're very difficult.
No, they're not. We've done it accidentally here.
That's true.
We didn't get the fry because we were unprepared, but yeah, it's definitely happened here.
To me, that's a great candidate fish for if you want to try and breed them. Put a group of them in a 5 or 10 gallon aquarium with a bunch of mosses and plant material or mops or stuff. Keep them in there for 2 weeks and then pull the adults out and wait to see what happens.
Yeah.
Yep. Grow the babies out. I would do moss over anything else because the moss will provide the first food for the babies.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an interesting thing to bring up with shrimp. Shrimp will eat fungus fish eggs. They won't eat viable fish eggs. So like a lot of killifish breeders will put a cherry shrimp in their fry raising or their egg hatching tubs to pick out the fungus eggs so that the fungus won't spread to the other eggs.
Yeah, I actually thought about just putting fry as one of my combos because like a shrimp tank and a fry tank combined is perfect.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
Yeah.
Those erythromicrons are very cool fish. I remember the first time I saw them, it was kind of unbelievable.
Yeah, the first time I saw one, my brain immediately processed that it was... I literally said, why is that celestial pearl Daniel so jacked up? What's wrong with it?
Yeah.
Such a unique color, too. I don't think anything else really gets that sort of deep emerald. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm.
But when you look at enough fish, the thing about the... erythromicrons and the CPDs that really stands out to me is they have the exact same body shape.
Yeah.
True.
It's just a different paint job. It's so weird.
It's like a different little kid painted each of them.
Yeah. It's so weird.
Ooh, I like polka dots. Well, I'm going to do stripes.
Whoops.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, right along in that same lines is anything in the Sunda Danio genius.
Yeah.
Another group of small, I mean, I think there's kind of a little bit of the theme going on here now. If we're talking about a group of fish that you want in a shrimp tank, just get little ones.
Yes. Look at the mouth. If it's smaller than a shrimp, you might be okay.
Right. So little Danios or little Rasboras or little Tetras, I think little killifish, little micro pretend cichlids even could be fine. little betta. No, wait, never mind. No, no little bettas.
Yeah, I mean, maybe some of the teeniest ones. You could do both.
Yeah, I think even Brunnerum has got a big enough mouth to.
Yeah,
you it's might like be the question able is, to pull. Will it try? And if it tries, will it kill it?
Right. Yeah, it's like your best bet would be like the Appy Appies, and even then, I'm kind of like, but bettas are so tenacious.
Yeah, so I know I had some friends of mine that tried a mono shrimp with their Betta Splendens.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked for a little while. And then one day they got home and they saw the Betta with the torso of the mono shrimp in its mouth. And it was beating the tail against the rock to break it into parts.
That's pretty clever.
Yeah. So... Wow. I don't think I would do that. No. I don't think I would even do Brunnerum with cherry shrimp because, yeah, they couldn't fit the whole cherry shrimp in their mouth. But I don't think that would be the issue.
Isn't Nick the one? Didn't he have his Betta Persephones and a pea puffer in his shrimp tank?
Yeah, but Nick's weird.
It's like one of those exceptions that prove the rule kind of thing. Yeah, you can get away with it.
Right.
You're getting away with it. Right.
Yeah, exactly. That doesn't mean it's necessarily going to work for everyone. Oh, but wait, we were talking about Sundadanio species.
Yes.
Sundadanio goblinus is my favorite. That's the blue ones that get some red on the base of the anal fin. People come in and go, why do those cardinal tetras look weird?
Yes.
Because they're not. It's also one of those fish that doesn't get the love because it doesn't look good until it gets settled in. It gets conditioned a little bit.
Yeah. People come in and say, wow, those are really nice cardinal tetras.
Yeah, exactly. And then when you see them just in a sales tank where they haven't colored up, they're like, oh, those kind of look like washed out little somethings. I'm not sure what they are. It's worth it. And Rubeus and what's the other?
The green.
The green. So there's one that's solid blue, there's one that's solid red, and there's one that's blue and red.
Margier? No. Goblinus, Rubellus, and something.
The one that we hardly ever see, but every once in a while shows up.
It's like, it's the slightly less pretty one.
Right, exactly.
Oh, Axelrod Eye. That's I don't know right. why we couldn't remember that. Yep. There is a Margeriton, too.
Okay.
Want to talk about the how stupid common names are? The Axelrod Eye is one of, you've heard me allude to, there are four species that in our region are referred to as neon green resboras. That's one of them.
Right. Yep. Kubotai, Emerald Dwarf, and the Sundadanio.
Yeah. And then there's a second Sundadanio that sometimes I've seen, say, called, the, and I think it's the...
It's the Axelrod Eye and the Margeriton are both called green. There's also, remember when we ordered neon red resboras, thinking that they were going to be... the Rubellus, and they weren't. They were SP Rasboras.
Right.
Didn't guess that one.
Nope.
Wow.
Common names are so much fun.
Now the list that we got them from says Neon Red Rasbora parentheses SP.
Yeah. So anyway, soon to Daniels.
Yeah, great little fish. Definitely like little gems. Mm-hmm. Not neon, not like glow, but... just so iridescent shiny? And shiny. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Little jewels.
They're a favorite.
I also love that, I think, so Sunadanio, as in S-U-N-O, Sunadanio is probably my favorite example of podcast listeners. And this was actually one of the impetus for us starting to put species names in our descriptions. Mm-hmm. There was many things that led to us being like, okay, we should take the time to do that. But, we got a specific listener question that was just like, what are these pseudo Danios you're talking about? Yeah. Like they, and we were like, no. Sunda Danio.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see how that'd be a really hard one. Usually Google can figure that one out.
Yeah.
But pseudo and sundo would be spelled so differently.
Yeah.
That'd be a tough one. Yeah. Sunda Danio.
Sorry about our accent, guys.
Exactly. We are what we call Michiganders.
Yeah.
Because we're close to Chicago. Michiganders.
Yeah. Yep. Close to Chicago with a little bit of Minnesota.
Just a wee bit.
Then you get like that tiny bit of youper in there and things get real weird.
Fifth one, right?
Yeah, this is my last one. I think I'm going to go for maximum chaos with my last one.
Oh, good.
Load your tank up with as much plant cover as you can and throw in a colony of Endler's live bears.
Oh, for sure.
And then it's just baby city all the time. Do some big water changes, but if you want a tank full of activity that's constantly reproducing, that's fascinating and just a blast to watch, I think shrimp and Endlers are just such a fun combo to do.
Okay, I'm going to... Everyone at this table is going to groan. So I think my favorite aquarium co-op video is he explained that, like, he came up with this idea of if you had a 20-gallon tank and all you wanted to do was just breed and propagate stuff, his suggestion was a 20-gallon long with Endlers, cherry shrimp, and Java moss.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You could come in every week and trade stuff in if
exactly.
that's what you had.
Mm-hmm. And I was just like, wow, that's actually a really good idea. People should do that.
You probably wouldn't need to pay for fish anymore.
Yeah. Join your local fish club and get watercolors on speed dial because you'd be here a lot.
Yeah.
Wait, just don't bring us Endlers because we have too many.
No, but if you had a nice variety of Endlers that you maintained, that would be a different story too.
Yeah, that's true.
Where like mixed Endlers, yeah, somebody will drop off 200 and we'll try and sell them over the next few months. Right. But like fancy varieties of Endlers, you can charge a little bit more for them and people are looking for them too.
Especially if you had your pike kerosene right next to them so you could call your Endlers live bearers.
There you go.
Yep.
Yep, and the next tank over, you have your pike kerosene and a breeding colony of bristlenose plecos.
Yeah,
then
you've
got everything.
That would cover it, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there's... Where do you stop when you start talking about live bears with shrimp? I mean, okay, mollies, but we just don't like mollies. So.
Yeah, I mean, if you have enough plans, I've seen people pull off platies.
Yeah.
But it's just really... Yeah, about keeping that balance.
Right.
Yeah. No, that's fun.
That's fun. Endlers are cool.
Yep. It's a great kids tank, Endlers and shrimp.
Other guppies.
Yep.
Oh, what am I going out on? Dwarf green barb.
Oh, yeah, those are cool.
Mm. Pethia gelius. This is a Pethia barb that maxes out at like an inch.
And a cool Pethia barb.
Yeah. And so like, if you want all the fun of a rosy barb or an Odessa barb, but in a smaller package and with some shrimp, here you go. That's my suggestion. Like, and I don't have a lot to say about them because I'm like, they're not a hard fish. Like I literally... When I was introduced to them here, I started playing around with them, and it's literally just a small rosy barb. It's not like it's goldish green, like a.
Yeah, like I gotta say, I don't see the green. It's like a gold tan to me.
Yeah, it's like a strange brassy color.
Cambodia and Vietnam, right?
I don't know. I think so. Okay. Yeah.
They have a nice iridescent gold spot on them, too.
Yeah, they're just a cute little barb. I like, they're so easy to work with, and so I want people to... With the nano fish craze, I don't know why this fish hasn't taken off. Like, it's has so much to offer. It's a small package of a big fish.
It hasn't taken off because barbs are mean.
Yeah.
Tiger barbs.
Yeah, like, if you like nano fish and want tiger barbs, this... I mean... They've got boldness, but no aggression.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got a little group of like four right now. And every time I walk by, they're just sitting there looking at me. Like I never see them chase each other. They don't chase my smaller fish. They're just chill. They're really, really calm fish.
Yeah. I think of the fish we've talked about, this might be the biggest bodied. Because they've got the kind of like that... diamond-shaped body, give or take, roughly. Mm-hmm. And so, like, they have a pretty big broadside.
They're like a rhombus.
Yeah. Like a decent silhouette. But it tapers off into a tiny little face.
So cute. Good choice.
Yeah.
So for my last one, I'm going to do the biggest cheat we've ever done.
Did you do it? I was thinking about cheating.
Were you?
I thought about it. I'm thinking we're all going in the same direction here.
Yeah?
What are you going to say?
Anything under an inch and a half.
Ooh, no.
That's
I was,
a good cheat.
I was about to say, my cheat was going to be any fish you want as long as you have a colony big enough to deal with it.
I was going
to
say a mono shrimp. So.
Wow, we went completely different directions.
No, I think you and I are on kind of
You're
a similar
the same
page,
wavelength.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the kind of the one of the biggest takeaways that should happen here. What fish are safe with your shrimp? Not the fish that won't eat shrimp, but the tank that the fish can't eat the shrimp.
Yeah.
Right? Shrimp is really, really good fish food for almost all of them. Mm-hmm. So if there's enough cover, you can get away with a lot. Some of the actively hunting predators, and maybe we should do a top five active shrimp predators podcast one of these days, right? And we kind of mentioned bettas in that, and we mentioned opistos in that, and some of the other actual dwarf microinvertebrate predators, like some of the bigger bata species or things like that. Some of the fish that predate and snuffle, like some of the loaches, I think are going to be able to snuffle through mosses and pick out the little tiny shrimp.
Mm-hmm. But I've seen thriving shrimp colonies in angelfish tanks.
Yeah, it just takes a big, nice, thick carpet of dwarf's edge.
Yeah, and the angelfish are going to be like, okay, when does the feeder go off? Like, I'm not getting through that stuff. Are you kidding me?
If fish orient themselves straight or up, they're not going to be likely to actively hunt your shrimp. If they orient themselves down, they might be a problem. Mm-hmm. I love it that you mentioned the angelfish. That's a perfect example.
In one of our front displays,
we had, but there are two or four angels in there for a while, and the shrimp are multiplying like crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they were cherry shrimp too, like bright red, like stand out on the green shrimp.
Yeah, yeah.
And the angels are just kind of like, eh, not worth it.
No.
I thought about using emperor tetras as my last fish because of the story that I started the podcast out with. But we're missing out on just way too many fish. I think it's something that people overthink. Mm-hmm. They're looking at what are the perfect combinations. I think it's way more about your tank design and what else you're growing in the tank.
Yeah, people really ignore the fact that their tank is an ecosystem. Like it's not.
Yeah.
Like what works in one tank isn't going to work in another because it's a unique environment. And you got to factor that in a little bit.
A tank that has Endler's live bears and no plant cover isn't going to be a shrimp tank.
Right.
But big fish that aren't going to bother it could be.
You said, a tank with angelfish that will, you know, if you drop shrimp in from the top, they're going to get devoured. Not a single one is going to make it down to the bottom. Okay, unless you dump in a whole boatload of them.
Right.
But you drop them in one at a time and the angelfish are going to pick them off one at a time.
But like if you give your colony a chance, if you start your tank and even like 2 or 3 months, like a female cherry shrimp is going to lay about 30 eggs a month. So if most of those survive and you start with, you know, at least 6, but really if you want to get going, start with 10 or 12.
Yeah.
2 or 3 months, you have a thriving colony that a reasonable stocking level of most fish won't destroy.
Right.
If you have plenty of cover. Is that enough caveats?
Yeah,
I think so. The way that you introduce shrimp to an existing tank becomes very, very important.
Mm.
And going back to the emperor tetra example, sneaking them in, those shrimp would have been just fine had I snuck them in. And the way to do that is we're so used to, you know, we get everything acclimated, get the temperatures that we want, and then just net them out and dump them into the tank, right? Don't do that with shrimp. If there's fish in the tank, you're providing manna from heaven. But take that net and cover that net, and then with your hand, lower that net down right next to where the mosses are, the plants are, whatever kind of cover you have, and carefully shoo the other fish away, or even feed the fish over on the other side of the tank and let the shrimp out that way. And the fish won't even realize. They don't know. Most of our aquarium fish are so not used to feeding on shrimp off the bottom. They don't know them as food unless it falls from heaven. So that, I think, is an important note.
Is there any groups that we felt like we should have gone over that we didn't? I had a couple
Hillstream loaches.
I don't see it being a problem.
It's kind of what I thought too.
I mean, they're many of them are bigger than Otto's, but are their mouths better at it? Are they bigger themselves? I don't think so. I think they'd be fine.
I got a snuffly fish that I think would be just fine in a shrimp tank.
Which one?
Corydoras hebrosus.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and Pygmaeus. And
Pygmaeus. Pygmaeus, for sure.
Yeah, maybe even Simulus.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah. I put a Hera Jordani, the dwarf anchor cat, on there too for like bottom dwellers you could do.
The true algae-eating plecos pretty much are going to be just fine. Every once in a while, they're going to pick some off. But if you've got some good rocks for the plecos to suck on or some driftwood for the plecos to suck on and some mossy areas away from that, they're not going to hurt them.
Yeah. Other small top-dwelling rainbows and killies, pseudomugil.
Yeah. Any of these pseudomugils I think would be a great choice for a shrimp tank.
Hatchetfish, same thing. Yep. I don't think they can look down, so it's not too much of a thing.
Yeah.
Like some of the small tetras that like I feel like need to be named, the cardinal tetras are like a quintessential shrimp pairing for me.
Yep.
Embers and rubies, those are the teeny tetras for me.
Yep.
Honey gouramis. I would do that in a heartbeat without worrying about it just because it's such a surface oriented fish.
Yeah, they'll probably take a few here and there, but they are not going to be very good at it.
They're not going to mess with the population if you've got a population, I think.
Sparkling gouramis too.
Yeah. Yep, I agree.
A long fin betta to address, like, because I think that's one of the more common combos, can be okay, but they're just so prone to bloat, they always end up eating the shrimp food. Right. So, like, any other long fin betta combination, I'm really more worried about the betta than the shrimp.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But, yeah. I thought about some of the smaller coolie loaches, but then I was thinking, those zippers only get like 2 inches.
True.
Yeah, they're so sneaky beaky though.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they'd pick off a lot more of the babies. You might not see your population grow. I don't know that they'd get the adults.
But right.
That population might not grow the way that you want it to.
Anything that's that adapted at getting into their habitats.
A lot of the other surface dwelling small live bearers, some of the Lamias that don't get too big, guppies, we talked about endlers. I bet your Heterandria formosa would be just fine.
Oh, yeah. I don't think they could.
Yeah.
I mean, they are... I have them in with those dwarf barbs, and they are less than half the size.
Right. Yeah.
They're so tiny.
So what are... who out there is like, guys, I tried that, and my shrimp are all gone. Like, did you find what we talked about totally wrong at all?
I want to hear about the people who defied the odds too. Yeah. People who have been able to make it work when they shouldn't have. I like to hear those stories. And of course, we're going to respond to you yet.
Yet.
But
yeah, I was about to say, like if you have a tank where all your shrimp got eaten by something we talked about, tell us about the tank.
Who else is in there that you're not telling us about?
Or like, what's your design? Is like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I need to know because a lot of this is so circumstantial. Like if you don't have the right cover for a shrimp, like any fish can do something.
Right. Right. And I would love to see pictures of those tanks in our podcast listeners group on Facebook. That's been a blast. We crossed 700 members this week.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Isn't it?
That's awesome.
And it's just been so much fun to watch and see what's going on with everybody. You can also email any comments, questions, and concerns to podcast@watercolorsaquariumgallery.com. And we're always taking questions for listener questions episodes because those are so much fun. So please send those out.
Adding up again,
oh, awesome.
By the way.
Yes. Cool. Yeah. Well, yeah, definitely we got to do another one of those because that's a blast. Yep. And then we don't have to come up with an episode idea. For
yeah. I was about to say, like, I want to get back to the Facebook listeners page. I feel like Ben, Amy, and myself are all getting less, like, we have the appearance of being less and less active on it. And part of it for, like, 90% of it for me is that, like, we're getting enough people on it now that, like, I'll see a post and I'm like, oh, let me answer that. And then someone already has. And so I'll just, like the comment. Because I'm just like, yeah, you said it. Like, you got it. Like, yeah. Why would I step in and say exactly what
thing.
You said?
We have the best listeners. It's the coolest aquarium group I've ever been a part of. And that doesn't have anything to do with how cool it is that people are listening to this, even. It's just a great group.
Yeah.
Yep. Lots of fun top contributors there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, so like Amy said, keep those questions coming. I want to do another one of those episodes very soon because that was fun. And, you know, we just recorded one recently without Nick, and maybe we should do another one without Nick and see how that goes. Sorry, Nick.
Got to make him feel bad for leaving us.
Yeah. There you go. Otherwise, thank you so much for listening. Let's have lots of fun and keep those hands wet.